Now, about a week later, said Perry, he saw the defendant outside the rose, not on his initiative. Defendant said, Perry told me I'd be getting off that job, which is going to cost me, come to £200. We were in the defendant's car, and just the two of us. I thought he was being greedy. I said, I haven't got £200, and I'd see him later. The defendant said, you'd better go and get it. He was trying to say, he said, he was going to get me off. Well, that's where it started, isn't it? The money being handed out. It's important to get it here. And it's self-significant, perhaps, that of £200 vested, 50. The evidence is right, and indeed been paid in the swans. He spoke of the telephone conversation, telling the one recorded as the original. Meeting on the 28th of October. Remember that, I'm on the back, according to that rate on it. Perry said that he had indeed handed over the money on that occasion. It was his own money. The card, he said, I gave him £50. He said, I'd give him another £50 when I got it. He accepted that. He was searched afterwards. And the money he had, the £50, which was his own. The 31st of October, where was Dunwich? Again, he said, I had £50, I borrowed it. It was not given to me by the reporters, nor by Hawkey. The reporters noted the numbers, and then gave them the money back. Obviously, the reporters had taken the money too, taken the numbers. That, he said, was a successful recording, and you heard take 5 and 2 and 3, you heard again, summing up. Said, Perry, that was indeed the conversation that I had. He spoke to the meeting on the 21st of November. He docked us over £50 on him. It was my money, he said. The reporters had noted the numbers before I met the defendant. Described getting a meeting with the defendant. Listening to the tapes afterwards. So those were the original tapes which you heard. You heard what he said in relation to page 24. Here's the other thing, he said, that's the moment when he handed over the money. Remember that he came up with all the different words. It was all this, that is the time after Perry says the money was and said, Perry, he never tampered with any of you take the body. So he was cross-examined at very great length. Cross-examination in relation to the favor, and Perry said, you told me if you've got fingerprints, if they've got fingerprints, particularly in section 1, it's a little bit complex about whether the word if is used. Well, where that takes you, who is that? Maybe it's not the heart of this case. Eddie tonight saying to Detective Constable Clarkson how much it cost to walk out of PRS and police station. And of course Clarkson says that's what he did say, so there's a conflict in those two, which the defendant wants up. After he had treated money given to him by porters, but he insisted that the money on each day was his own money. But I'm not getting into big detail about that. Perhaps worth just reminding you that when the defendant was cross examined about that, he suggested that he'd be discreeting things. His reply is, I'm not skilled at discreeting things, or I wouldn't have so many convictions.
That's Perry, Your
Honor. Perry, I'm sorry. You remember what he said about that. It's right to say that there was a degree of confusion about the reporters dating numbers. It took a long time to get the explanation out. There was obviously a degree of confusion there. Whether that matters or not is for you to say. Sergeant at Nuneaton. He described the arrest of Brooks Perry on the 24th of September, Perry being taken to Campbell Police Station. Here at one time, the defendant asked, if I minded, if he had a word with the prisoner on the van. The defendant said he was a local officer who knew Perry and might be able to get through better than I. I agreed, he said. I had no parliament to be expert. The defendant knew that. Yes. That's right. Sergeant's knew. There was no parliament to be expert. And Dr. James, the defendant said, I think you'd be guilty in section one. Sergeant said he found dissension between the CID and the uniform archer captain. He expected to deal with the CID when he got there, but found himself dealing with mixed officers. Though the atmosphere in the Metropolitan DC said was full of the feeling he didn't like. Well, that says, not surprising. There was indeed a corruption on the part of the defendant at the time. It's at the source.
situation which produced good feeling as being a corrupt officer and combat officers.
You will say exception.
What's it tell you about the real situation there?
He said that the charge sheet at Nuneaton didn't enter his visits to Perry.
Remember that part, I wouldn't be able to do it.
He said Perry didn't offer him as bride, but he was told later that he'd offered a bride to Wilson and Clarks. Well, Clarks said he did, Wilson said he didn't. That's not a small comment. His favorite visit of Louis and Lambert to Nuneaton, giving the impression that they were looking for scapegoat there. It was he said, who advised his superintendent that Perry should not be called back to answer his bail, and I've already read you that up, which makes that okay. He said, too, that so far as he was concerned, he would never tell a suspect to say nothing or lead him to think he had nothing on. I would never allow a suspect to think that I didn't know much. With that, what do you think is really quite obvious? And what would the object be of telling Perry that the police had nothing to do? Had nothing to do. It wasn't true. Get something out of him. What would tip on him? Sergeant Hannes was another of the Nuneaton officers. He heard the defendant tell Sergeant James that he thought that Perry would take a section of one, so to speak, as he could to stretch all the death at Nuneaton. I spoke to the defendant, he said, on the Saturday, that's the 27th of October, I told him Perry was to be bailed. He said to the defendant, Perry said he knew the police had no evidence against him, but Perry said it would cost him when he returned to London. I told the defendant, it was alleged that the police officer had told Perry this. In other words, that the police officer had given the game away. Now, what was the reaction of the defendant to that? According to Sergeant Hannes, it was to ask anybody else knew those allegations. He was told that Robson, Scotland Yard, everybody, and the defendant asked him not to tell anybody else. Not to tell Robson that he signed that. Well, that's right. Except that, was that told by the chairman next time? Said to the defendant, you would have tipped Perry off partly to say no. You asked whether it would be all right for you to see Perry. Then there was Constable Wilson, a Nuneaton officer, present when Perry was arrested. He said that he was not offered a bribe, and you'll remember, I already told you, that the other officer there, Clarkson,
city boss. That's all for Dreamland and the
Board's chair. The chief constable come down with surprise and said, "Detective chief inspector, here goes our evidence quite briefly about this. He opened the diary. I'm not going to say any more about that now. He had seen the defendant at Scotland Yard. He'd been there when they prepared a questionnaire. And he put to him, I'm not going to say for it again. The defendant simply denied as he was perfectly entitled to deny having committed any offense at all. And he denied having received any money from Perry. Well, anyway, that may help you is this. If you want conclusion that the defendant did give Perry money, and he's denying giving him any at all, I think it's very difficult to think that that money was given for any honest purpose. But that's the basic difference there. Mr. Lambert came from Harvard, elderly gentleman, then a superintendent, chief superintendent of the Metropolitan Police, who took charge of the Times inquiry, he said, from its inception from 28th to 29th of November until April or May of 1970. He told you that the tapes are under lock and key all the time, they're in the custody of the police. He dealt with Perry's original statement made on the 5th of December. Remember that argument about the word if? He said the word if was put in later. And the defendant relies upon that. He said Perry was taken under the care of the Times, provided with accommodation. He said he had left the inquiry, but the reasons for his doing so, remember I was brought out by the defendant when he was asked about the re-examination. He said the reason for his leaving the investigation had nothing to do with evidence in this or any other case at that time. And he had the tapes obtained to him, and he, another person, who carried over that Imogen, he said this, "I am convinced that our tapes, which came into possession of the police in 1969, I listened to all of them then on several occasions, I am convinced they are the same tapes. Complete rubbish to say that the tapes could be tampered with or fabricated. It would be quite obvious to me if they had been tampered with. I'm certain it would never happen." So now the background to all this is, of course, the evidence of the two Times reporters who initiated this inquiry, Lloyd Manzer. Their evidence is obviously very important to this case. If you accept it, it provides just that degree of support which you would never have been looking for before you acted on Perry's evidence. Each of them, in turn, gave you an account of each of these occasions when the defendant met Terry?
Once.
Rose?
Twice.
That very bloody hot. Each of them heard the tapes after they'd been recorded in a very short time. Each of them has told you that the conversations they heard today in this court were the same as the conversations they heard immediately afterwards in the car. They spoke of the searching of the man Perry before and after he met the defendant. They spoke of him having the £50, and I think a little small change as well. It's ready for you to say whether they're right or not. They both stoutly denied tampering with the tapes in anywhere. They said they were taking the greatest care of them. They dealt in detail with each of those meetings. They told you that secretaries were used to do the transcription. They described the tapes going to be copied. They described what was happening in the newsroom. They described the custody of the tapes. First going home, that was Lloyd, before they got the cabinet, and thereafter being locked, the only key being in possession of either Lloyd or Fanta, everybody else having access to the tapes. Main evidence is to a large extent remaining, supported by Mr. Hawkey, who has no access granted in this matter of all remaining. He was described by Mr. Millard as being scared to bits by what was going on. I don't think he had very little access granted in the case. He waited for the leaders, the supporters, with a considerable degree of support. They are all adamant that the tapes were never together. They spoke of money, they spoke of searches. I have already pointed out to you that there was a degree of confusion about the numbers. On one occasion, I think the numbers were taken down straight to the money being passed to another police officer on another occasion. There was a bit of confusion about that. You could say whether you think that's important or not. For events, the evidence is there. Accepted that these searches were made on each occasion, they went and visited the demands on each occasion. Cross-examined, criticized at very great length, suggested that their names had been concocted. It's even suggested to Mr. Lloyd that he got a long history of mental derangement. Evidence is nonsense. That was a suggestion which no barrister would possibly be allowed to put your witness unless it was supported by other evidence. And been supported by no evidence at all. They think that was a suggestion which was simply never been put to what it was. And they wonder why. If that evidence I've been dealing with is right, there is very clear evidence, not only that the tapes have not been delivered, but also, et cetera, that money was given by Perry to this defendant on his first three occasions. The defendant says that the two reporters lying evidence, he has thrown every sort of accusation looking off at them, you could say how they emerged from that ordeal. Is that right? Really, the end of that, isn't it? Because in the last resort, you have to decide whether they are right and whether their states are genuine and original. If they are, then you may think there's not a lot that can be said on the other side. Their states are genuine and original. As I said, they're spoken to by two reporters, principally responsible for this inquiry. They are supported by Mr. Paul, who has no answer to that. You, of course, consider her evidence with great care, bearing in mind all the decisions which she can has made of it. The waiting is not that significant. Miss Millard told her she was extremely frightened by what was going on. Described both of those two reporters as honorable men. They are honorable men. They've given honest evidence about these matters. I think that that is the most powerful feature in this case.
Text.
There are a large number of points taken about those tapes. They are a very important part of this case. It's through them, very largely, that Brown has been able to bring to life, so to speak, the events of the autumn of 1969, so they don't come again. And so you will consider very carefully whether those tapes are genuine and original. As I said, if you're not sure that they are, then of course you will disregard them. That indeed is the defendant's case about them. He says that you should, at the very least, harbour very considerable doubts about the mistakes, and it's possible for you to be sure that they are genuine and authentic. He's been unable to point to any specific passage which he says has been altered, but he says that the circumstances are such, and the expert evidence is such, that you should be very careful for attaching weight to these tapes, and he says that they are not to be accepted. He was saying at one stage that they were fraudulent, they've been captured. You would say whether that is the case or not. If so, of course, the prosecution moves a very vital weapon in their armory. Now, first thing about them, of course, is their custody and continuity of handling. That is obviously important. What he said by the defendant is that they may well have been copied. If they have been copied, well, then they're not original. And that is the end of it. So you will look very carefully at the questions of their custody and continuity of handling. That falls into two sectors, isn't it? The first sector is before they get into police custody. The second sector is after they got into police custody. When they got into police custody, they were, on the evidence of the police officers, and you've heard the evidence of those who had custody of them, first Mr. Osborne, then Mr. Vernal, and Collins, who was the assistant who was on duty one weekend to get the keys himself. They all speak with great care. They took on these tapes, and it is accepted
by the defendant's experts accepted by each one of them, that the police were indeed taking the greatest possible care of these texts. And indeed, if one looks at the evidence of Mr. Paul, the defendant's expert, on whom the defendant set a great deal of store, Mr. Paul can examine the tapes on the 21st of September 1991. He also listened to the Times conference, made, you remember, before the originals, the alleged originals went into the custody of the police. He heard those. And he said, any tampering with the tapes must be done before the 3rd of December. Well, put that aside the evidence of the police officers in the case. Bear in mind, of course, that I think Mr. Moody had said two keys at one time. But put there evidence of Mr. Forbes beside the evidence of the other police officers who went in, it was really fanciful to think, without particularly what Mr. Forbes said, that the tapes were, or could have been, tampered with after they got into the police custody. Now that leaves you, therefore, with some sort of alleged application, doctrine, falsification of some sort, earlier than that, before they got into police custody. Well, the defendant himself was eliminated from the scene, the secretaries, and that was obviously the right, because nobody was just the secretaries in doing the transcribing. Fabrication or doctoring. It's not suggested that Mr. Hawley, although he was capable, said the defendant, of editing tapes, it's not suggested that Mr. Hawley actually did it himself. And that really leaves Mr. Lloyd and Mr. Munter. One of them took the tapes home on some occasion. So far as they are concerned, no evidence at all that they have the necessary degree of skill to edit tapes, let alone edit tapes of this sort, people talking at the same time. One of the experts said it's not an easy thing to do in your bedroom. And so far as doing it at location, sound, facilities is concerned, we've got the evidence of Mr. Hale, again, all highly dependent, that he's absolutely positive there's no looking done on his premises. If there had been, somebody would have been fired. So that's very confusing, I think, on that aspect of the matter. So if there was fabrication, the only suggestion can be from him, in terms of that it must have been by Lloyd or Munter, and it can be before, or events in there. Or somewhere, it wasn't in any known premises I down mediation services. They knew little or nothing when they think about to do this. You may ask yourselves, how could they possibly have done it, even if they wanted to? So again, it comes back to the question, doesn't it? Are they honest witnesses? They are. Well, they certainly didn't have the context. If you don't believe they were dishonest witnesses, well, then you'd be unrelated. That takes for you to say whether they were honest. The suggestion is made that the tapes were copied at some stage, and because they were copied, therefore, says the defendant, obviously they're not originals, and so he was discarded. One of the suggestions made
is really based on the idea that all of these tapes were virgin fresh tapes. Remember how that suggestion was ensued. Mr. Hawking did say that at one time. One of the porters did say that at one time. Mr. Hale said that all tapes went out fresh. Mr. Millard said all tapes went out fresh. Well, that's the way things have to common sense, and certainly ought to be said. The edit now is tapes 1, 3, and 5 were not factory fresh, and that's accepted by the crowd. Lloyd said, so far as first tape is concerned, that he didn't know if the tape used was new or not. Remember the one produced by Mr. Hawkey, a number of other conversations that he had put on it. So far as tape 3 was concerned, Lloyd said it had been used before. Remember when the batteries had run down. And so it was used again. So far as tape 5 is concerned, Lloyd said he couldn't remember whether or not it was fresh. Munter told you that in the early stages, that is probably after the 30th of October, Hawkey wasn't properly equipped. Nobody had devised a foolproof system of marking, where there was no possibility of a mix-up. And it's plain, I think, that the idea was that fresh tape should be used. And that's what everybody thought ought to have been happened. Ought to have happened. But when you analyze the evidence, it's plain everybody agrees that those tapes were not originals. Mr. Hawkey told you he didn't realize on tape 3 that that was so. He said there was no particular reason to start BD after 3A. And he said it was by accident that we overran the conversation with another incident. He said do tape 5, it has two conversations on it. If that was done, it was pure accident. Quality is unaffected, and what he was really saying is that looking at these documents, if they're not factory fresh, well, that means I must have used them again. And in the situation they're obtaining in the early stages, when they were still the way perhaps a lot of experimenting and what was going on, it's perhaps not surprising that some of the tapes were used again. To all of it, that is the situation. The Crown accept that there's a lot of empty rich tapes. It's very plain, I think, that some mistake has been made somewhere, probably by Mr. Hawkey, and got what Georgie had, and who have, in fact, insisted on factory fresh tapes being used every time. But then it is. Is it not that the fact that a tape is not factory fresh does not affect the quality or indeed the reliability of the conversation recorded on it? Each of these conversations has been made back to a number of people, Lloyd, Hunter, Perrett, and Lambert. Each of you, each of them, tell you that the conversations on those tapes were the conversations which they had kept there. That's the important evidence in this case. Is that true? If that is true, well, it doesn't matter whether they were factory fresh or not. What matters is, are those the genuine conversations? At all events, that is the point. the defendant makes, to which the attaches a considerable importance, and will give it whatever weight you think right. There was a further suggestion about a fourth day used on the 21st of November 1969. That isn't in existence. You remember the first of the copy date boxes was got mobile or Nagra crossed out. The suggestion was, by the defendant, that there was in existence another tape, but that had disappeared in a copying process, and there was a sinister accommodation to that, which validates the validity of the other tapes. Well, now, it turned out, you remember, that when witnesses were asked to look at schedules in their statement, original statement, and indeed, when we listened to another part of one of the tapes, remember that? It appeared that what happened was simply that that tape hadn't left. The recorder had been moved to too far from the transmitter. It hadn't come out. And that, the rating gives the explanation of that discrepancy. That's what I think described. All this, again, that's point which the defendant makes, which you will take into account. He makes a further point about the tape number 2, which is a 5-inch, not a 7-inch tape, will therefore only last, he says, too short a time for the whole conversation to be recorded. Again, you do that point. What way do you think right? He makes a further point, which has been made time and again about the difference between 14 and 15 tapes that have been built with time and again. There was at one stage witness who said 14 tapes are taken, and the other witnesses, who about all witnesses at least, got the tapes, said 15. It's a point which due to defendant's attention weight, but you can see one of the news book that there were 15 tapes to write at the police station and later